Ted, I can't believe it, man. Five, Ted? Five?
We're working our way up to it.
Five trailers.
We're gonna do it. Five trailers.
Hey, let's get to this thing.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, how's it going this week?
Good, Jim. How are you?
Good. Episode 77. Let's welcome everybody.
Howdy.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been a little bit for me and you to be solo. You know, it's typically been a menage a trois for a couple of weeks.
Yes,
and now we're back, just you and me, sweetheart. So how's it going?
Good, good. Yeah, I wanted some quality us time. So, you know, I booked the guest for next week. We'll get into that, you know.
All right, me and you time. Hey, walking over to the camera, I saw you had a big beer.
That's right.
So I don't want to waste any more time, any more of your drinking time. Let's get into that and then we'll get into everything else.
As per usual, I have a story. I went in there and they had a misplaced 120 minute dog. What is that? Dog head?
Dogfish head?
Dogfish head?
Yeah.
At 120 minutes, and I think you had told me that, and I was like, ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was misplaced, so I didn't know how much it was, so I brought it up to the counter, and I had this in my hand, and I had that one. And the guy looked at me, and he was like, oh, 120. It was like, he was excited for my evening. And I was like, ooh, like $12. I'm like, that's quality ABV, dollar per ABV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he was charging it. He was, because it's like a six pack when you drink it in one beer. And I was like, okay, I can't podcast on a six pack.
Right.
What is it, like 14? It's like 17.4 or something like that. I think it's like 17%.
Wait, it's a 17% beer?
Let's look it up. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Which one? Dogfish had 120?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you didn't buy it though.
No.
Oh. I was gonna say, wow, you destroyed me tonight.
Yeah, it's anywhere from 15 to 20% ABV.
What? That's like a bottle of wine in a bottle of beer.
That's what the cashier was like, ooh, this is like a whole six pack in one beer. So it's a value.
Woo!
But so I decided to lay off the ABV.
What did you get though otherwise?
I got this Acoustic Ale Brewing Experiment, and it's again another San Diego, California, only 6% ABV, which is nice. But it's a big 22. It's called IPA Willow Wolves.
The Willet Wolves?
The Willow Wolves.
No, the Willet Wolves.
Willet Wolf?
Right.
I see it.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. That's awesome. Okay. That's all right. So let's crack this thing.
It's Willow Wolves?
Willow Wolves is the name of the beer.
No, what's the name of the brewery?
It's got a cool... Oh, the brewery is Acoustic Ales.
Oh, Acoustic Ales. Okay.
Acoustic Ales out of San Diego.
Gotcha.
But I love the idea that they're brewing experiments, because I was like, what kind of hops are you in here? And it's got none of that. It's just
every week's an experiment. So, Ted.
Tell me what you got.
Have you ever heard of the Waldo special?
I know. Where's Waldo?
See, but, okay, the guy with the striped stuff, you try and find him in the crowd?
Yeah.
But do you know of the Waldo special?
No.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad, because I didn't either.
Is that like the gun that Waldo uses to kill the wizard or something?
I don't know. I never heard of that. No.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so a couple days ago, me, Timmy, and Mikey, we go mountain biking.
Uh-huh.
Right? Mikey's on the back of my cargo bike. Timmy's on his bike. And he said, Daddy, how far are we going to go? I want to go mountain biking. So I said, Tim, we'll go mountain biking. It'd be like, you know, mile and a half. Well, you know, I'm a bad judge of distance.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes out to be like 5 miles. And my kid's out riding, you know, and we're going over... You know, a couple quick stories. So we're on this long, according to a 6-year-old, it's an epic mountain bike ride.
That's right.
And he says, you know, Daddy, I didn't take a vitamin today. When I take a vitamin, I'm full of life. I forgot my vitamin. I don't know if I'm going to make this, you know? Well, he did great.
Is he six or 60?
He's six. So he did great though. He made it. And we get all the way to the point where we get to the liquor store. That's our mountain bike ride to the liquor store.
Right, of course.
So we go in, and you heard of a Deschutes Porter, right? Deschutes Brewing in Deschutes, Oregon?
No.
You never heard of Deschutes? Oh.
Let me see.
Well, anyway, it's a porter. So it's a pretty famous porter.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so I'm like, I'll get a Deschutes. And I said, you know what? What's this Waldo's thing? So I look at it, I pull it out, and I'm like, damn, I don't know what this is. I'm like, ah, whatever. I don't feel like reading it. I'm gonna take it and I buy it, and we go home.
Yeah.
So here we are. I said, okay, I'm gonna save it for the show because I never heard of it before. So I get home, I pull one out, I look at it, 11.7 ABV.
Oh my God.
And in the store, I'm like, I don't know what this is. And I didn't even take a chance to, so I don't even know what the heck I'm drinking. But I told Clarissa tonight, I said, it's 11.7. I'm just going to like share some with you because, you know, I've already had a couple of beers and I don't need to be smashed, you know, drinking this thing. But you can see it's a Lagunitas.
Okay. Oh.
Where's Waldo? What am I saying? The Waldo's Special Ale.
That's awesome. You said it's a porter?
No, this is I guess it's an IPA.
Oh.
No, the Deschutes is a porter.
Oh, the Deschutes is the porter. That's so funny. There was a box on my boss's desk, and he's been out all week because of conference and stuff. And there was a beer box, and it had a really cool label on the side of it. I thought it was like a super ultra, you know, local micro brew.
Yeah.
And his secretary, his assistant was sitting outside, and I was like, is that beer on this desk? And she goes, you could go look at it because it's open, like an open case.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'll go look at it. And I looked inside, and it had what's that something? The Lagan. It had
a little something.
Little something.
Yeah.
And then it had
Lagunitas. That's what this is.
It had like the straight up IPA. It had 3 6-packs in there. And I walk out of there, and I was like, I was expecting something crazy, something cool, something micro. And there's Lagunitas, but which is a quality beer. Don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But you know.
Well, that's what this is. It's Lagunitas, the Waldo Special.
And this one's Lagunitas that I've never heard of, so I'm sure that they have quite the array.
Nor have I. And like I said, I bought it and I came home and I was like, whoa, 11.7, whoa. Okay, so I'm gonna share it anyway. Let me open this here.
Let's pop that.
While I'm popping it, you know, give me a tasting note.
Okay, cool. So I am not the biggest fan of this. It is a nice IPA, but it's strangely darker. So it says Nelson and Simcoe hops, but it still has a lot of the Citra. So I think the Simcoe, I don't know. I think it needs something else.
Hey,
it's like a something balancing.
Hey, Clarice, I got a pour for you. Where are you? Got it over here. Where are you? Oh, here you come. Here you go. There you go. All right, enjoy.
Cheers.
Hey, salute.
Cheers.
You know, hey, you don't have to holler that much, right? The boys are not quite asleep.
I know, makes for a good show.
Oh my God, really?
Come on, cheers.
Love you.
Come on, salute.
Cheers.
Okay. All right, Ted. All right, let me taste this thing.
All right.
Woo! Man, it's like hoppy vodka.
Really?
What do you think? Hey, come over here. Give me your tasting notes. This is like hoppy vodka, man.
Is it the finish? The finish is what is super alcohol, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah. It is like, what do you think?
Definitely hop.
Well, oh, so it's like so much. Oh, wow. It's like sharp. It's sharp.
Woo!
All right. Yeah, this is like, I would just call it a sharp.
Okay.
Like it finishes sharp. Like it bites you.
Awesome.
Yeah. Like we were talking last week, hair of the dog.
Man, now I should have gotten my 17%er.
Oh, because I beat you at 11.7. Is that why?
I was like, I'm not going to go all out every week.
Trust me. I didn't like do this on purpose. I'm just like, I'm going to buy it. What the hell's the difference? And I get home and I'm like, woo, 11.7. I know what I'm drinking this week. But okay, here's another quick thing though.
Yeah.
So what I've been doing is every time I get a six pack of something, I try to find something unique and I save one. And last week we went to Valley Brewers and I've been stockpiling. So I have like the fridge is full of
singles
of
or
future, like I don't even know what they are, like 22s, 20s. I think they're all different sizes. So anyway, I'm sitting there last week and I said, and you know, I'm looking through the array of beers and I see this beer with a number 3 on it and I pull it.
Oh yeah.
Wait, you know it?
No, I've seen that, but what is it?
It's a Belgian ale.
Oh.
So I pull it out and I'm looking at it. I'm reading the thing. And Chris, the owner of Valley Brewers, Solvang, it's where I get all my like homebrew stuff. Anyway, so he's like, he said, Jim, right there, you're holding the most expensive beer we sell. And I was like, whoa, okay, how expensive is it? He's like, it's $60. I'm like, $60? He's like, well, let me look it up. And he looks, he goes, $61. And I put it back. I'm like, a little bit too rich for me. So I went, I bought a few other beers and stuff. And like I said, I'm stockpiling for future shows. So I can't wait to get into the future shows. But I felt this one was one I didn't intend to buy. I shouldn't say intend to buy. I didn't intend to buy it because it was like just sitting there. And I didn't know I was going to have it on the show. But once I realized what it is that I had and the kind of story about taking Timmy on his first trail ride and everything, and
yeah,
I figure, you know what the heck, I'll have it tonight because it's like amazing and
fresh in your mind.
Yeah, exactly. All right, dude, so what have you been up to? We haven't had, you know, because of Nomad and other people we've been, you know, Beck and all these interviews we've been having, like, hey, talk to me.
That's why we have 5 trailers tonight. So yeah, it's been a couple of crazy weeks. I think we mentioned when Beck was on that Bryce had the appendectomy.
Right.
So we're still recovering as a family from that.
I bet.
Then we've been watching lots of movies. We went and we saw Godzilla in the theater.
Did he pick up a bus and throw it back down?
No, I mean, I think, no, that's more of the Hulk.
I'm talking Hulk about space. The Blue Oyster Cult song.
Oh no.
I thought you'd figure I'm it sorry. Out, but
no,
whatever.
I don't know. Okay,
I got
don't
you.
Know
I
it.
Got you.
But yes, so it begs the question, as we often ask, does another one of these need to be made? And I don't know. I don't know the answer because I'm not a super fan of that stuff.
Right.
But we saw that, and then we saw Endgame in the theater again. And then what else did we see? Then I've rented Free Solo.
Oh yeah, what'd you think?
So Free Solo.
You didn't like again, it?
It was a little hard to get into. Like the first 10 minutes, I was trying to defend the movie that I had not seen to my wife and my daughter. My daughter was just like, I'm out, you know?
You know why, and, though? You know why? They're not outdoors people.
But also, he's kind of a jerk in the beginning.
He's a jerk throughout the whole thing.
Well, no, I think as you layer in the issues and like you said, the, what is it? The non-incident?
No, the non-trauma.
What? Non-trauma. What? What do you call him?
Sociopathologist. or not ologist, but sociopath. So, oh my God.
Right.
The non-traumatized sociopathic. What did I say it was? I don't know what I said.
Brilliant.
It was something along those lines. Like he's a non-traumatized sociopathic. Like person. I mean, in other words, he's somebody who has little regard for others and their feelings, but not to the extent that he's experienced trauma to where he harms people.
But here's the interesting line that I draw from the whole movie and watching the whole thing, all encompassing of what they chose to include and what they chose to exclude.
Well, how do you know what they chose to exclude?
Well, you don't. All you know is the choices that they made.
Okay.
And there's always an opportunity cost.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
So I called it a robot. He is a type of robot. And I think the sociopath is kind of a different angle in the same idea where he climbs mountains and he makes these calculations and he's like, oh, this is move 37 in my 5-hour journey up the mountain. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And he's mapping it out and he only journals about the stuff. And his friend's like, don't you ever just say, hey, I daydream about this. And he's like, nope, that's the climbing journal, you know? And as his girlfriend gets into the picture, he starts hurting himself. He starts second guessing himself. It's like,
right. Women.
The robot is breaking down because it's becoming more human.
Love does not compute. Does not compute.
And it's like, thank God she's like crying as she's driving away from him, because he would have died if she stayed. I'm convinced.
Well, you know, and the funny thing about it is, you know, he's the kind of guy, like, his amygdala was completely offline, yeah. Right?
I was like, that's amazing.
I mean, so they go to do the brain scan and they're like, dude, your amygdala is offline. It doesn't work.
It's dead.
You know, like it.
And doesn't. He's rationalizing with her and she's like, well, maybe I just need some heightened stimulus.
Yeah, I know. It's like, wait, hanging from the edge of El Cap isn't heightened stimulus enough? You know, like, I know. It was like, as a psychologist, though. Well, as a psychologist who I'm not. Okay, let me say that, yes, I climbed. I climb. I've ice climbed. I've rock climbed. I've done all that kind of stuff, but I am not a climber.
Right.
Right. Like, I've gone with friends who are climbers, and all I've done is, like, they tell me to put my foot somewhere and I put my foot there. And then.
And you always have a rope.
Oh, there's always a rope. Yeah, I've bouldered, which is my version of free climbing, and I'm like literally 3 feet off the ground. Like, I'm not exaggerating. They're like, you know, there's a boulder and it starts going like, you know, negative like 30 degrees, you know, meaning like it goes the other direction instead of like overhanging, it goes underhanging.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like 3 feet off the ground. So like I can easily go, oh, I didn't make that one. I just put my foot down. But like my whole sport is like mountain biking and road riding and bicycling, right? That's what I do, where I go like quote unquote extreme. But the funny thing is, it's like doing the climbing stuff I've done in the past, like I said, which is really, in the grand scheme of things, is pretty minimal.
Yeah.
And being a psychologist in practice for my profession, like I loved that movie for those two reasons, because I've climbed enough to have the experience of climbing. And when they started getting into his like brain functions of why he behaves the way he does,
yeah,
oh my God, it made so much sense, you know, at least to me.
Totally.
And it, like, and that I think is why I enjoyed it so much, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I really did feel bad, like genuinely bad for like his girlfriend and his friends and the guys filming it and Jimmy Chin and all those people, because like, I think they genuinely were concerned that like this guy's such a loose cannon that he's just going to make a run for it and kill himself.
But he shows, you know, and this is why I say what they choose to include, because they show his attempt and when he just he called it, and he was
mature, though, for sure.
He was halfway there and it was like perfect timing, but she was in that camper, she was in that van,
right?
She's way too close. Get that away from me.
Yeah. It's like he needs like his, I don't know, what would you call it, like his emotional connections gone.
Yeah,
because when you learn about his family, like they were so like ice, you know,
like there
wasn't that cuddling or coddling as a child, and all of a sudden his wife's like, hey baby, like, let's go get a refrigerator, you know? And he's like, perfect.
That's ridiculous, too.
He's like, perfect. Let's get the smallest refrigerator for the biggest hole.
It'll look so ridiculous.
Was that hilarious or what? You know, I mean, it was, dude, I loved it. Anyway, what else did you see, though? So you saw that in Godzilla?
I saw Godzilla. I saw Endgame again. I saw Glass.
Wow.
Glass was okay. And then tomorrow I see Dark Phoenix.
Oh, okay. Cool. Tomorrow you do.
Tomorrow. So that tomorrow is the first Fox movie that the Disney employees can see.
Nice.
So one of the perks is you see all the movies that come out. And
is that one of those 8:15 in the mornings?
You got it.
Nice.
8:45.
Oh, 8:40. Dude, I was on the wrong quarter. I guess we're going to just finish up what we've been watching, so I'll get into mine. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so we have 50 minutes left of Black Panther. So I'll work backwards.
Okay.
So 50 minutes. So we got all the way into 50 minutes left of Black Panther. So they call it the vibranium, and I think it should be the unobtainium. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like nobody could get it, you know. But yeah, so we saw that, and we saw Spider-Man Homecoming and Thor Ragnarok.
Okay. Tell me what you think.
Okay. So not quite done with Black Panther. Mm-hmm. I like Black Panther to the point I've seen it so far. Like I said, we're about halfway through, maybe a little bit more than halfway through.
Have you seen the casino scene yet?
No, we haven't seen this. Hey, spoiler. No, but even though he's been shown, this is still, you know, he's been shown in other movies. This is still an origin story. I think that one still is yet to play out. So far, a little bit slow, and, you know, it's okay.
That's what I'm saying. Once you go to Busan and you have that scene, I think it picks up from there.
Okay, looking forward. I can't wait. I can't wait to report back.
Cool.
Spider-Man Homecoming, I liked, you know, I thought it was really cool. I liked the nerdy friend who wants to build the Death Star, and he sees him crawling across the ceiling, and which completely makes the trailer for Far From Home, it makes sense. Because I'm like, well, wait, he's Spider-Man, and this like fat kid walks in, and all of a sudden, you know, like, I don't get it, you know, but after seeing Homecoming, the trailer makes way more sense.
They expected you to be that far along if you're watching the trailer, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just overall, I think it's like a standard kind of a Spider-Man movie, with the exception that Tony Stark comes in. And that was the one you said that was one of his...
His extra movie.
His extra, yeah.
He got 15 million. Supposedly he got 15 million for 3 days work.
Wow. And you know what? You could tell he was punching a clock.
He was selling the soap in the valley.
Oh, man. Selling the soap in the valley. That's no doubt. You know, and the thing is, I thought, you know, I really enjoyed the movie. I felt like when Tony Stark and Iron Man, you know, was in it, I felt it was kind of forced. Like those scenes were a little bit forced. Mm. I don't know why, but.
Did it lift it at all for you? Did it make it feel more weighty now that you've seen the other Iron Man movies and stuff?
You know, honestly, if they didn't have, I mean, so the Iron Man comes in and kind of saves the fairy from cutting in half. And there was a few scenes where, like, you know, they required him. I feel that they could have written the scenes differently where they didn't need him. I don't think it was necessary.
Well, I think it, well, I, so this is once again where you're talking about, like, we'll give you our Iron Man, but he comes himself at this $15 million price tag.
Right.
And then guess what? We have a little more control, a little more action in here. And this is all speculation, obviously, but it really sets up the whole arc of Tony's relationship with Spider-Man. So
yeah, and probably to come.
This is the very beginning of that arc. Well, I guess no. Is this after? Okay, so.
But they were at the airport fight.
Right.
Yeah.
Is Civil War. So Civil War, and then this is the growing of their relationship. So I think it's a needed step in the arc of their friendship, their mentor.
Sure.
You know, it's the Jedi versus the Master kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And it has to develop in kind of the background because it's these two separate properties.
Yeah, and then I feel that Thor Ragnarok?
Oh, yes. This is one I had most hope for you.
Oh, most hope. Marvel meets Idiocracy.
Oh, no. Okay. Wait. In the movie. The movie.
The movie.
Okay, yeah.
What else is it? No, but Marvel meets Idiocracy. You've seen Idiocracy.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it's like, you know, the Jeff Goldblum, like, planet is like the Idiocracy planet.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, you know, where everything's, like, just trash and all, like, you know. And the funny thing is, so Clarissa and I, you know, we're both Jeff Goldblum fans from, like, The Fly and what's the movie?
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, Jurassic Park. And not actually, I wasn't even thinking. I was thinking more of Independence Day.
Oh, yes.
You know, all that stuff, right? So
how about The Big Chill? Did you like The Big Chill?
Oh, The Big Chill's great.
Yeah, he's in that.
Yeah. So, you know, we're Jeff Goldblum fans in many respects.
Right.
And so he shows up with that little blue strip on his lip and all this stuff. And like, without, like, we had no idea, right? And without, like, warning and without, like, practice or anything, we both look at each other and go, Jeff Goldblum? You know, it was hilarious. Like, we were just like, whatever, you know? And so they go with Jeff Goldblum. But the main thing, though, is, like, the tongue-in-cheek was okay. Mm-hmm. You know, with, like, Thor, like, you know, he knows the Hulk from work. And, you know, I know him from work, you know, he says and all this stuff, right? And I don't know. It was okay, you know? I don't know if I still like Ant-Man better, I think.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
That's noted.
You know what? If I can interrupt really quick, what I loved about it, though, was the sister.
Hella.
Yeah, exactly. And when they come in with the Led Zeppelin music and stuff, like, dude, yes. I was amped. I felt like kicking ass, you know? Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm ready just to go outside and just like throwing something at somebody. You know, I just felt like I was just amped, you know? Yeah, it was great.
That's awesome. So Korg is my favorite character in the whole thing.
Who's Korg?
He's the big rock dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Okay. The funny thing about that, though, I'm like watching to see. I'm like, really? There's like this rock guy who's just like matter of fact. Yeah. You know, like, oh, hey, great, you're here. Yeah. So you want to just hang out and, like, you know, just like play cards? Or I don't even know what he's talking about.
Like,
what
is like, oh, Doug. Doug's dead.
Yeah. He was, I actually enjoyed him. He was and that pretty was, good.
And the actor who played him was the director.
Serious?
Yeah.
Wow. Who's the director?
Watiti.
Oh, you know, I wanted to ask you, shoot. So Kevin Feige. Yeah, Kevin Feige. So it says like after his name's like PGA or something.
Right. Producers Guild, yeah.
What is that?
Producers Guild of America?
Yeah. Oh, is that what that is? That's like Actors Guild. That's like their union.
Yes, exactly. Producers Association.
So why would you put that after your name, though?
In a credit? In a movie credit?
In a movie credit, yeah.
Yeah, because that's how you get qualified for different things. Like, I think, what was this, like 10 years ago? There was a huge kerfuffle because people were getting producer credits, and producer credits were going like 10 deep because people just throw money at projects and get producer credit.
Okay.
So they made a rule where you were limited to 3 producers or something like this. Somebody's going to correct us.
Oh, I see. Okay.
For like Oscars and stuff. So you had to be PGA and, you know, and this is a whole deal. And I mean, there was PGA before that, obviously, but you know, it's all a part of that whole accreditation and.
Yeah. I was just like, you know, as if Marvel is not enough, you know, you got to say like, oh, PGA, like really? Like, I mean, at some point, like this is the way I see it anyway, like, you know, Ted Willett. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
MBA.
Ted Willett, MBA. It gets to the point, you know, like you are so famous. It's like Oprah. Do I need to say Oprah, like woman talk show host? I mean, all you got to do is say Oprah and like right. They already know it's Oprah, right?
But that's the uniqueness of the name, though, too.
Yeah, but you're Kevin Feige for Marvel and you're the producer. No one's going to be like, well, you might be the 5th producer down. I mean, dude, I highly doubt he's going to be in question.
Right.
You know, anyway, I was just wondering what that is. And, you know, all of a sudden I started noticing it and I'm just like, whoa, hey, there's something new. All right, dude, what do you say we get into?
Let's dive into our
ad
onslaught here.
Yeah, we got 5 trailers to get through. Ad Astra.
Yes.
All right. What's with the name, would you say? Did I miss something or do I not know what's going on?
I totally missed it. I don't know what the name has to do with anything.
You don't either?
No.
Oh, good. I don't feel so bad.
I wanted to call this one Space Cowboys 2.
Space Cowboys.
It's got Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, I noticed.
It's got Donald Sutherland.
Right.
Clint Eastwood's going to make a cameo. And, oh, it, what did I say? Did I say Tommy Lee Jones already?
You already did. No, but you forgot about Scott Glenn.
Who?
Did we miss Scott? Was Scott Glenn in there?
Scott Glenn.
Oh, maybe that was Tommy Lee Jones.
I don't know. Okay.
No, but you're right. It was Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes.
All right, we can get rid of all that.
Yes.
Space Cowboys 2.
Space Cowboys 2. So what did you think? I sent you the article from Forbes.
Yeah, I saw that.
Where Ad Astra and Ford versus Ferrari, they're the next two Fox movies. And rather than stretching it out, they're kind of just like throwing these out there. End of the year, huge blockbuster stars.
Well, end of the year, you mean for the release date, not for their trailers. Right.
Okay. Yeah, if you're a summer trailer, you know, you're probably in that, you know, last quarter, first quarter space. But the Forbes article said it feels like that they're trying to throw all the stuff that's in the pipes out of Fox to get, you know, the new system in place and everything. So obviously I put the...
Before it lands in Disney.
Right, exactly. And yeah. I put a more specific disclaimer on our website today or last week. And so, you know, obviously I'm not speaking for any of the companies I work for. But... Yeah, it just felt like Forbes was kind of taking them to task for it, but I don't agree with it fully. So we'll see how it pans out.
Do you notice, though, how like tech topics come into play? And it seems like once the zeitgeist gets to the point where people start complaining or start worrying about, like, you know, whatever, smart in-home devices. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, Chucky comes out and he wants to like murder you because like he's a smart in-home device now. Mm-hmm. And something like Ad Astra, you know, it's one of those things where we want to colonize Mars or we talk about going back to the moon. It's, you know, whatever the space travel topic is in the current zeitgeist, and all of a sudden it's not like, wow, we're gonna go there and it's gonna be blissful. No, it's gonna be like the most reckless, abandoned, everything's gonna blow up, it, you know, we're all gonna die because we want to go to Mars, you know, and everything's gonna be horrific and terrible. And do you ever notice how that kind of works with like certain technologies come into the fray, and then it's always the worst case scenario plays out in the movies?
Yeah, like I said before, I think it's the new other. So rather than having
the new other,
you know, the villains be like cultural villains, or like, ooh, you know, like the famous Back to the Future had the Iranians or whatever.
Yeah.
So
right.
The Libyans, I think we'll have to check that.
It sounds like, you know, like Libyans, Iranians, Lebanese, symbiotic relationships. I don't even know what it is, but yeah, you're right.
But so it's safe to say that technology
is an easy villain?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And that, you know, and that's kind of where I was going. So it's like, you know, we want to do these colonizing trips with spacecraft and NASA and all the stuff that we plan to do in the very near future, and obviously in the distant future. Mm-hmm. And like, well, let's make that the villain.
Right.
Yeah, it just seems too like easy.
So, what do you think?
Though Matt Damon is the Martian.
Yeah, and actually I was saying, so Matt Damon's character in The Martian could be in the same universe as his character in Interstellar and his cameo in Thor Ragnarok.
Wait, who is he in Thor Ragnarok? Did I miss that?
He plays Loki in the play that Loki puts on, right?
That was Matt Damon?
Yeah.
Get out! Did I totally miss that?
I think you fell asleep for those 5 minutes.
No, I remember the play. Wow. Okay. Hey, you got one up on me. I don't know. I mean, overall, though, Ad Astra, are you going to see this?
Yes. I want to see this.
You do want to see this.
I really want to see this.
Because I want to see it.
You know. You don't want to say it.
Oh, I'm not going to the theater for sure.
Right.
No, I would have to say, though, this is along the lines of the movie genres that I enjoy, but I ain't going to the movies for it. This is an at-home viewing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. With that, on to Ford versus Ferrari.
So my first thought was, I got to tell my stepdad Tom about this. Because he's in the old cars and, you know, and the cool thing is, like, I love these kind of movies, you know, like right. period pieces, biopics, you know, you're looking at like
Impossible Odds.
Impossible, like, oh my God, like, looks amazing. Looks amazing. You know, but what I gotta say, though, is like, if you look at like, okay, Ford versus Ferrari, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one thing about, like, you know, you look at like Porsches and you look at American cars and you know, all this stuff. I mean, like, for example, Chevrolet has like the Corvette, obviously, and the Corvette Z06, you know, like that car, that's like a $60,000 car. Okay, sounds expensive, right? But when you put that car for its performance capabilities up against the European competition and, you know, all these other vehicles and stuff, I mean, you're probably talking like that $60,000 like car anybody can buy, you know, at like the local Chevy dealer, to, you know, a Ferrari, Porsches, Maseratis, all these, like, you know, expensive exotic automobiles. I mean, that car holds its weight. It's, I mean, the thing's a race car. You know, you're talking like 500 plus odd horse, maybe more than that. I don't even know. Horsepower. I mean, the thing could just like hold its own on a racetrack and everything. And it's like half the price of any of these European, you know, like equivalent models.
Right.
So to say that a Ford can't compare to a Ferrari, I you know, I mean, I get it for its time in the 60s when this comes out and everything. It is what it is. But I just think that, you know, American cars are just so mass produced and the mass production that if you think about like what Henry Ford put in like 100 years ago in the production line, I think that you don't have to hand build cars or build them slowly to make for a good quality automobile, you know? And I mean, maybe in the 60s when this is out is one thing, but I think for today, I don't know if it holds, you know, but if you're a car guy, like, I could see this being a big deal. Makes sense or no?
Totally. But what do you think about the trailer though? Like the way it ends is kind of this.
Oh, I love it.
Plays out. And I think that's kind of a little fresh thing that, you know, people are starting to do.
Yeah. I love the trailer and here.
Yeah. That's my only thing. Another couple of big stars for a November release that who knows where this would have landed, you know, on a different slate. But so it is, and hopefully we get to see these too.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I just finished watching it again, and like I mean, this is one I'd love to go see because as a dude who rides bikes everywhere, like I love old classic cars, and I completely adore the antique and classic car side of things. It's you know, I think it's just fantastic, like the race car side of stuff, you know, and
right.
And this is one I think that, you know, it's going to appeal especially to like baby boomers. I think are just going to be all over this thing.
Really?
So, you know, I think when we talk about knowing your audience,
yeah,
I think they peg the audience for who they want to target. Yeah. Millennials, I don't think are going to be a part of this. I think they're just going to be like, I don't get it. It's a car. Who cares?
Is that an Uber? Do I have to drive it or can I just ride in?
Exactly. Is Matt Damon my Uber driver? And am I going to be scared witless, you know? All right. The kitchen.
The kitchen. So I put these two back to back. Did you notice something similar about Ford versus Ferrari in the kitchen?
Did I notice something about Ford versus Ferrari in the kitchen? Well, the one thing I would say is, though, like, the kitchen is like single moms fantasizing about being gangsters. I don't know. What am I missing?
They both have Rolling Stones songs featured.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it gotcha. Harkens of the era. You know, it's like if you want to have a period piece.
I was thinking more theme of character, not theme of music.
Right. So I just thought, it's a great shorthand with the audience to say, like, we're going to put you in this place and time. We'll give you the most socially, widest phenomenon of the time and put some Rolling Stones in there. So
that's it, man.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, it looks great. I mean, the thing I love, though, is, you get these women and all of a sudden they're like, that's it. We're the gangsters now, And I mean, I would say, if you look at all these movies to include like Goodfellas and what was the TV show?
Sopranos.
Yeah. Goodfellas, The Sopranos, everything that has to do with gangsters across the board. Mm-hmm. Women always play the mom, the annoying girlfriend, the aunt who's the drug addict. And they always play the character on the back burner who's just like in the way, right? Mm-hmm. With this one, I mean, front and center, like, we're the gangsters, don't F with us, here we go. That's the way I kind of read into this one.
Yeah, and I think to have McCarthy, Haddish, and Moss in the same space, these are, women at the top of their game, top of their popularity. It's really, it feels like it could be as good as Goodfellas, It really had this great context of everything down to the humor, there's a lot of humor in Goodfellas, but this violent humor and this translates into this space as well. So I'm really hopeful for The Kitchen.
So as a guy who's married to a woman, what is your opinion of let me ask you first and then I can qualify it if it needs clarification.
Right.
What is your opinion of women having the fantasy of being gangsters?
Oh, do women have that fantasy?
Yeah. I mean, what's your opinion? Of women having a fantasy of being gangsters. I mean, do women have the fan? Does Anne have a fantasy to be a gangster?
No.
At all?
I don't think so.
Because, and here's where I say I want to qualify it is, I think guys have a fantasy about being a gangster.
100%.
Right? Guys think they're going to walk in somewhere and someone's going to take off their jacket and they're going to say, hello, Mr. Willett. And all of a sudden, your favorite well drink is sitting on the bar. You got your single malt scotch, whatever, waiting for you, because if it's not there, you're going to cap somebody. I mean, guys have that fantasy, right?
Yes.
But you don't think women do?
I'm sure some do. You asked me if Anne did and if I thought that Anne did, and I'm sure I'm going to hear whether she does or doesn't after this, but but my assumption
Ted,
is...
how do you not know that I don't have that fantasy? We've been married 15 years. You don't know I have that fantasy?
I can longer, just longer, longer.
Longer, okay. How long has it been married? Oh, I shouldn't have... Oh, my God. Was that a bro faux pas? Yeah.
17 years.
17 years. You know what? Hey, I'll edit that so it works. No, 17 years. Wow. Nice. Yeah.
02. Nice. 02, I knew. I was doing the math from 02. So that was the
cause. Your addition is slow. Your addition is slow. But I don't know. I mean, women as gangsters.
Tell me, Clarissa.
Oh, hell no.
No.
No, with confidence, I would say Clarissa is not a gangster.
Right.
Yeah, she is not going to walk into the room and then want to brass knuckles you in the face.
Right.
No way. No way.
And what about what's her name? Sunny? Sanny?
Who?
The girlfriend in Free Solo.
Oh, I forgot her name. I saw a while back.
She's not dreaming about being in the kitchen.
No, she's not a gangster. No, I mean, it is so weird too. It's let me ask it a different way.
Okay.
You're single. You're on the prowl. You go to a bar. It's Thursday night, dollar bottles.
Right.
You walk in. Is this your kind of woman?
Yes.
It is your kind of... So you get a hard ass who's I'm going to just kick somebody's ass. That's your kind of woman?
Have you met Anne? I think it's pretty clear.
Okay.
Just because she doesn't want to be a gangster doesn't mean that,
Oh, she's Ted's gangster. I gotcha. Wow, you like strong women then?
Yes.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I don't know. If I walk in and it's like, and she just wants to like kick my ass, I'd be like, hey, slow down there, woman. You know, like, okay, I got you. Overall, though, I got to say, though, I did like the trailer.
Bringing it back.
They're bringing it back.
Yes. Like the trailer, like the music. I liked the levity that they play throughout. And then when they need to be deadly serious, they're deadly serious. So it hit all the beats. It was amazing to hit all the beats.
I agree with that. And the part, like you said, when it's serious, it's serious. When it's not, it's not. And I wish I knew how many times I lost count my money. Yeah, I don't think it's ever happened.
Right.
You know, I wish it happened, but all right. So talking about puppets.
Yeah. But can I just say one thing before we go?
Oh, on? Yeah. By all means.
Anne has said that she'll gut me in a second. So I think she knows Goodfellas and she's seen enough of it to know that she is gangster and she doesn't have to want to be gangster. Because that was your question.
Did she say this as an in-live studio audience? Or
as an in-live studio audience, she just texted me, yes.
Just now. Just now. Yes. Gotcha. Yeah, Ted.
Real time.
Just let her know that I'm feeding you lines. Just say, okay, Jim's good. Feeding me lines.
Okay, add on to Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
Yes. So it looks like, am I wrong? Does it start with the 80s Dark Crystal puppets?
It
looks that way.
And then when he goes into the crystal and he looks into the crystal, it's like throwback.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, poof, it's like 2019 Dark Crystal. So it's like weird ass, terrible 80s puppets into.
I would not say terrible because there's huge fans out there.
Ted, we want comments, good or bad. We want comments, okay, good or bad. Okay. No, I mean, I was a fan of Dark Crystal, like big time when it came out, you know, in the 80s and everything. And I, you know, saw it in the theater and, you know, thought it was like amazing.
Right.
So I think I watched it, you know, me and Clarissa, I think watched it like, 10 years ago, I want to guess. Mm. And I will just say it did not hold up. Ugh. Yeah, it was rough. It was rough getting through. And I can't even say we even got through it all.
Well, this has got to be better.
You know,
don't you think?
I'm apprehensive. I'm apprehensive. I mean, it's like, I want to believe. I want to get into it. I want to enjoy it. The trailer doesn't look hopeful. Ooh. Yeah, it doesn't look hopeful. I don't know. And then, you know, to say it's like Jim Henson, I mean, he died like a decade ago. Is it really necessary to say Jim Henson?
Well, it's the brand, you know? They still say Walt Disney.
Well, Walt Disney, but I mean, like, the Muppets are like, barely hanging on with in popular culture.
Yeah.
They don't have a theme park. They don't have a major movie studio that owns the MCU and all this stuff. And then you're going to sit there and bring in like, you know, like Fozzie Bear. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Waka waka waka.
Yeah. I don't know if Jim Henson, I mean, I guess you have to because, you know, he's the one who did it first, but to replay like it's Jim Henson, like that's that important. I don't know if like today's generation even knows who he is.
Well, I think there's a certain demographic of people that were triggered by the original movie that were just like so bought into it because of the kitschiness or the, you know, the imperfections of the original Dark Crystal that I think those people have really locked into this and the social media is bonkers for this property.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I would, the fan that I was for the Dark Crystal, you know, back when I was young, makes me want to see it. Mm-hmm. However, as an adult and seeing the original Dark Crystal not long ago, even if it was 10 years ago, I think it was around then. But, you know, as you age, 10 years is nothing.
Of course.
But it, like I said, it didn't hold to what you believed it to be. Mm-hmm. And I just hope that this one's, you know, obviously better. However, when it starts off, the trailer starts off with the puppet, the girl puppet. And you're just like, mm-hmm. really? That's where it's going? It's still going to be this stuff? You know? And it looks like it gets, like, in other words, I think we're so captivated by the CGI of the industry, which brings me a point I'd like to talk about in a second, but it's so captivated by the CGI of the industry that, like, anything puppeteer, which was playable and acceptable, you know, not but a few years ago, is, like, in my opinion, like, you have to go the computer animated route at this point.
Why, though? Why not do practical
puppets? I don't know. Weird puppets just look like weird puppets. Like, they don't look believable.
No, but I don't think it's meant to be believable. I think it's another alienation device that you have to buy in enough to.
Oh, you know, I get you. I get
the story. And then if you're in there, you're in there.
So it's like when your kids do a puppet show, you're not like, oh, that's not real. You know, like it's, but instead you get into their story.
Right. I had to be taught that. So that sucks.
I gotcha. No, you know what? Like, okay, if it's my kids doing a puppet show, I'll forgive them of the puppet show. If it's like $100 million movie, you better damn not have cheap ass puppets.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And that's the point I'm getting at. Like, sure, I get it. Like, my kids are doing puppets, like, you know, paper bag or sock puppets or something. Mm-hmm. Dude, I'll give them forgiveness because, like, they got a budget of dad and his old socks, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at Jim Henson Studios, apparently you're telling me that's, like, important, you know? You better put some money behind this thing and make it so it doesn't look cheesy.
I don't know. I like it. I think maybe what you're thinking of as cheesy, I think of as nostalgic and, you know,
yeah,
like
okay,
old
okay.
school. So I appreciate it for a separate art. You know, people like animation, people like computer animation, and this is practical puppetry. It's amazing. It's not, it's a lost art. Why not have something that does it?
So if it were the Gremlins and you have, like, well, all the Gremlins running around as puppets, mm-hmm. and it was a 2020 release, you know, 2020 is around the corner, it's a 2020 release, would you forgive them for using cheesy puppets, or would you expect CGI?
No, I wouldn't second guess either call, because if anything were to be as good as Gremlins 2, then I would accept it regardless of whatever format it's in.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So you're a story guy, and if it's like with, you know, Dark Crystal, mm-hmm. you would say, you know what, it's puppets and they're holding true to the original form factor, so I'm not gonna like negatively judge them because
right.
they're so okay. I'll use this as my analogy, and then we could get to Loose to finish up. So if you look at like Singing in the Rain or something, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, one of those older musicals. You can have an on-stage musical where, you know, people are singing, dancing, tap dancing, and all this stuff. But because Fred Astaire is on, or Danny Kaye, or any of these old guys are on stage, or you know, on TV, mm-hmm. dancing and singing to like White Christmas or something, or Christmas in Connecticut, or one of these movies, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like one of those old school musicals. You're not gonna hold it to them because it's not live as it happens, but it's an old musical like thing that you just watch at Christmas time because it's just the format that they chose. It is what it is, and you're just going to accept it for what it is and be done.
Exactly. You just put the window dressing up, you know, if it's a set and you know, yeah.
I gotcha.
Like, you understand their set pieces, you understand their sets, but it's like forgiveness, like you said.
Yeah. So, in other words, you do a Tim Burton film.
Exactly.
That's like stop animation, mm-hmm. right? So, you're not expecting it to be like CGI. I mean, like, you expect it to be like little clay animated people that look all stop animation, and you're like, wow, that's weird, but like, you just get into it.
Exactly.
Okay, sure. I'll buy that. I'll forgive you.
of all the movies that you've seen, of all the shows and things that we've done so far, like, you're going to see Dark Crystal over all of the rest of them because it's Netflix. It's coming to your house.
Oh, that's the other thing, too. I forgot that in my notes. Like, it's so, like, easy. And Clarissa's a Dark Crystal fan. I'm a, like, yeah, we're, I mean, like, the, again, the bar is so low. I'll tell you what, this is a note to any exec out there listening to the Trailer Junkies, because you guys all listen. I want you to know one thing.
Yes.
Amazon Prime, Netflix, HBO, any of this stuff, make it easy. Jim and Ted watch. But when I got to drive an hour to go, well, 45 minutes to go watch a movie to come back for it, like, it ain't happening.
Nope.
Unless it's Star Wars. All right, Loose.
Loose. So I picked Loose for you.
Yeah, you know, I liked it. I think the biggest thing I thought was cool was the black on black conflict.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. You didn't pick that up or what?
No, I totally picked it up.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And yet, you know, because he's adopted into this white family, you know, there's probably a bit of white privilege that he feels, even though that he doesn't have it, you know? So
exactly.
So it's a very odd off-putting thing. And then luckily I made the analogy because Loose is all, you know, he explains it as the word for light, but it's also Lucifer is the longer translation of it.
Yeah. So,
you know, the darkness and the light, and his, it's very like Primal Fear. When Ed Norton Jr. plays the character in Primal Fear, Richard Gere believes him, but there are a few tells that his character gives, not verbally, but just through smirks and through these little asides. And you feel like this is one of those cases where Kevin Harrison Jr. who plays Luce Edgar, he just embodies this smirk, you know? So you never know what that smirk means, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I picked up from it was less about race as it was about privilege, right? So that's why I said the black-on-black conflict, you know, you have the woman who has the conflict with Luce, and Luce is adopted by the white family, and you kind of touched on it, where it's like the white privilege or the privileged family that he comes from, and it kind of like erases the racial component, and it just it strictly looks at like the socioeconomic component, right? And then there he is, you know, he comes from like, yeah, having the privilege essentially, and then the teacher, or I don't even know what she is, principal maybe, or I'm not even sure, and she,
oh, teacher, yeah,
yeah, teacher, and she's looking at him like, you know, the issues, the problems, the conflict that are that rise up in the story, and it has nothing to do with black or white, but more it has to do with, you know, wealth versus poverty or whatever, you know what I mean? And I think that's very like that, I mean, that plays a lot into, I think, where society is and is moving towards.
Right. And the other thing I loved about this trailer specifically is when you take your framework of what you're saying about socioeconomic differences, and as it introduces you to the characters within the trailer tells, you know, some trailers are story trailers where they do the story cell, they tell you what the story is going to be. But there's something very special about the way that the Loose trailer is laid out, because it shows you the rich family, you know, it shows you that they adopted this boy and how the great man this boy has become. So you're already like so rooting for them that the minute the tables turn against him, you're on his side.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then they spend the whole middle part where they're actually like, you're kind of going back and forth where you don't understand where you are. So it kind of throws, it's a trailer that plays out in three acts the same way a movie does. And by the end, you're totally in a Rorschach test of where you fall on who's actually telling the truth.
It's sort of like they build it up to where, wow, this kid came from some, you know, like totalitarian regime. Mm-hmm. They rescued him and he's, you know, like he's going to go on to do great things. And then they kind of build that portion up. And then what I hear you saying is then they put you in limbo. And then the third act is like kind of taking him down.
Yeah.
Like building him up. He's like walking the tightrope. tightrope, and then it's like he's not who you believe him to be,
right?
Sort of a thing, yeah. And which I think plays back into the Lucifer side of it, because
right,
you know, if you want to play, and you know, only seeing the trailer, obviously, but I think the way you're saying it is he, or if you think about Lucifer, he was like God's chosen angel,
right?
Who then gets cast out and becomes like, you know, Satan essentially. And so this guy is kind of built up as like the chosen, and then it ends as him being almost cast out.
Yeah. And I was tweeting about this earlier today and yesterday, and Matt Nigella, who's on at Next Big Picture.
Next Big Picture.
He's seen this and he said it's one of the best movies of the year. So
already seen the movie.
Yeah. I think it was at Sundance.
Oh, okay. Okay. Loose. Who's the distribution for it?
Let's see.
So if it was at Sundance already.
Mm-hmm. Why is it? Why can't I find it?
Well, while you're looking that up, man, this beer is like
kicking your ass.
Oh, 11.7. I'm glad I gave some to Clarissa. I still have like a quarter beer to go, and I'm like ready to like fall over. This thing is brutal. So it's part of their one hitter series. Now, you know, I'm like, what do they mean by one hitter series? I know exactly what they mean by their one hitter series. Woo! Did we figure out when this is coming out or what?
Oh, yeah. It's coming out in August.
Oh, in August. Okay.
In August.
Yeah.
And it's produced by Neon.
Oh, that's right. Neon. I mean, I'd like to see this one. I mean, I think this would be a cool one.
Do you handle disputes between teachers and students?
Sometimes. Yeah. It depends. It depends. I would say the way this plays out, it just seems like it carries on a little bit longer.
Right.
I would say typically disputes are much more petty than this. No, I'm serious. So like, I would also say that teachers tend to have the upper hand insofar as they're not going to just get in for a tit for tat with students.
Right.
You know, so it's like, okay, you're this way and that's what you believe and you're going to challenge me. That's fine. You know, you could challenge me, but you know, this is where we are in the curriculum and this is what we're going to do. And the teacher just moves on. You know, like I don't see teachers sitting there like arguing and trying to like hold their ground and then yelling at the kid. And you know,
it's not worth it. It's not worth it.
Well, and yeah, it's like they're 15, 16, 17. Like, you're not going to, like, you know, debate a kid on stage for the DNC or something.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But no, there's times when a kid doesn't want to stop and you have to, like, intervene and you're like, dude, back off. Like, this is, you know, and you just have to set up the scenario for the kid.
Right.
You know, I would say I don't think I've ever had a parent. Well, parents, though, tend to take sides of the kid.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever had a teacher who was like going so hard at a kid I had to tell them to back off.
Right.
You know, like, I don't think that's ever happened. If it has, like, you shouldn't be teaching.
Right.
No, I think this looks cool. I mean, I think there's a lot of education side of the house aside, you know, I think there's a lot of like socioeconomic racial stuff that's going on. And I think the thing I like about it is that the way they play the racial stuff, it's like black on black in a sense, you know, and it's more about like social status maybe, because the kid has a higher social status than the teacher does. So I don't know. What do you think?
That's definitely the way it's portrayed throughout the trailer. And you know, I feel like it takes you on the journey of the movie, and you'll either, if you like the feeling that you get from watching the three acts of the trailer, then you'll enjoy the movie. You know, it's like a good representation of it.
Exactly. All right, Ted, man, we covered like what? Tons of like what we've been watching, movies, yes. The Dark Crystal. I mean, like all kinds of stuff. I mean, puppets, you name it. Sometimes I feel like a puppet. I'm Ted's puppet, you know? Yeah.
All right. So thank you. And you have to go finish Black Panther now.
Yeah, Black Panther. And then next week we have a new interview.
I think we have a guest.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Was it Hubbard, right?
Yes, Joe Hubbard.
Joe Hubbard. Looking forward. Yeah. And yeah, look. Oh, hey, last thing before we get out of here.
Yes.
You mentioned how you get to talk with me every week, but 1 minute of Jason Calacanis and you're nervous. And you're like, I don't know why I'm nervous. I talk to Jimmy every week. What are you saying? I'm not a billionaire?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that what
I don't know.
Is that what it takes, a billionaire, to make you nervous?
If we're talking about like socioeconomics and we're talking about that in the last movie, yes, it does have a intimidation factor.
Okay, I got you.
But I read his whole book, Angel, about angel investing, and I'm ready to figure out a way to send the kids to startup camp instead of college, where they take all their college tuition that they would have spent and put it into startup, you know, investing in startups to get that unicorn, you know. And I think you can make a separate class of investor.
Is there really a startup camp?
No, but this is what I'm saying. Startup university, where we just, you know, we set you up with a cohort of connections in the startup space, in the venture capitalist space, in the angel space, and instead of going to college, they learn how to do business by meeting with 100, you know, startups in a year.
So I hear this two ways. Give me your money, I'll get your kid in a startup, not promising it's going to go anywhere.
Right.
And number two is, you know, Mark Cuban, you know, you're just going to come here and pitch me your thing and then we're going to do a startup. And I mean, I think it's already been done.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Shark Tank, but yeah, something like that.
Right. But what I'm saying, though, is like, you're really going to take some like 17, 18 year old kid and be like, hey, dude, hey, you were going to spend 200 grand on college. Screw that. You give me 200 grand and I'll give you a chance.
Oh, no, but they don't give us the 200 grand. They make 200 grand in investments.
Yeah, but how are you making money?
No, it's not. I'm not making money. I'm just trying to figure out a way to say that I'm sending the kids to college and then send them to this thing.
Oh, your own kids?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was like you're trying to start an entrepreneurial venture to like fleece other kids out of their cash.
No, this is just for my kids.
Gotcha.
So that they're off somewhere doing something important, but maybe it's not college.
Oh my God, dude. We can have another conversation at another time, but I've thought the same things. Like, you know, do you want to do $250,000 in student loans for like bullshit and bong hits? Or just like go be a plumber.
Yeah.
Like, and make 100 grand a year. Like, I'm not even like making light of that. I'm dead serious. Like,
yeah.
I would rather see my kid, like, you know, I don't know, like driving a tractor around, like pushing dirt, making like $100 an hour versus, you know, making 30 grand a year with 100 grand student loans. You know, like, wow. No, you're right about that, though. I thought I misunderstood what you were saying. I thought you were saying you were going to open up some, you know, like Trump University where you were going to like have kids come in and like give you money and you're going to like introduce them to a startup and be like, oh, sorry, it didn't work out for you. I guess I got your money now. I was like, what the heck kind of ass is that? Who am I doing podcasts with? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I still got a quarter of an 11.7%. Man, I'm like smashed over here. This is unbelievable.
Give more to Clarissa.
All right, man. Hey, I better let you go so I can finish this thing and like crash. I'm going to be like hurting tomorrow.
All right. Have a good night.
All right, Ted. We'll talk to you, man.
See ya.
All right, later.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.